Hey there, it's Kona Gallagher, host of And Then They Were Gone and Day by Day True Crime Stories, and I'm here to bring you an amazing opportunity to win some incredible prizes, all for a good cause. Join the Texas Advocacy Project's The Big Game Football Squares Raffle on February 9th, 2025, and help support survivors of power-based abuse. For every $100 donation, you secure a square and a chance to win amazing prizes. You can choose from two exciting grids. The Hawaiian Paradise Grid offers a grand prize of a seven-night stay for two at a luxury resort in Oahu or the Big Island. Or play the Beachfront Mexico Grid for a chance to win a four-night, all-inclusive stay for two at a five-star Marival Luxury Resort in Banderas Bay or Nuevo Nayarit, Mexico. Your contributions help survivors understand their rights, navigate the justice system, and secure emergency protective orders. To participate, visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org and select your grid today. Don't miss out. Tune in to the Texas Advocacy Project's Facebook page on February 9th, 2025, during the game for live updates on winners. Prizes are awarded at the end of each quarter, with the grand prize at the game's conclusion. So score big for a cause. Visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org to learn more.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
In 2014, a little girl named Relisha Rudd went missing while living in a Washington, D.C. homeless shelter, but no one noticed. For 18 days, no one in Relisha's life saw her, but no one reported her missing. It wasn't until a social worker from her school visited the shelter in person that he realized the little girl, whom he had been told was sick, wasn't sick at all. She was just gone. Relisha's story has had a deep and lasting impact on the D.C. region. July 11th is Relisha Rudd Remembrance Day. This week, we're asking you to join us in honoring Relisha, who has now been missing for 10 years. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Relisha Rudd. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones that you have at home. Now, this one's a little bit different, obviously, because you do know about Relisha's story.
I do.
But hers is one that stayed with me for the past decade. And for those of you who've been with us since the beginning, you may already know that we covered her on our second episode ever in July 2020. So I wanted to tell her story again, you know, with a few updates that we've had in the past 4 years. And I wanted to do it in time for this year's Relisha Rudd Day on July 11th, 2024. Her story is huge here in the D.C. area, but never really got a ton of national attention. So now, you know, that we're 4 years into this podcast and we have a bigger audience than we did when we started, I want to use our platform so more of you will know her name. Before we get started, we've had a few people join us over on our Patreon page. So thank you to Catherine K., Joanne M., Emily A., and Kenya W. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you all so much.
If you'd like to get these episodes ad-free and also get a copy of the ebook I wrote, you can do so by joining us over there at any level. So with that out of the way, let's once again get into the story of Relisha Rudd. Relisha Tinnau Rudd was born on October 29, 2005, to Shamika Young and Irving Rudd. From the beginning, Relisha's life was not easy. Her parents, who also had a son together a year later, came from unstable backgrounds. According to the Charlie Project, Shamika grew up in the foster care system, as her father was not a part of her life and her mother suffered from a drug addiction. Shamika, who was diagnosed with a mild mental disability, was a troubled child who spent time in a psychiatric residential treatment facility. While in her late teens, she met Irving Rudd, who was 16 years her senior and was working as a custodian at Catholic Charities. The pair formed a relationship and Relisha soon followed. While Relisha was Shamika's first child, she was not Irving's first. Irving Rudd had also been a young father. Back in 1991, his girlfriend gave birth to twins. Just 17 months later, one of them, a baby girl named Tarika, was rushed to a DC hospital. According to an article in the Washington Post from May 2014, Tarika was admitted with a split lip, a fractured skull, and bruises covering her tiny body. Tarika did not survive her injuries. During the investigation into her death, in which Rudd was charged with first-degree murder, witnesses described horrific abuse toward Tarika at the hands of her father. When asked if he had ever assaulted her before, Irving said, quote, "Not that one. We both was involved with spanking the other twin too hard and broke her leg," end quote. When authorities went to Rudd's home to check on the other child, they found Tarika's twin sister suffering from similar injuries. She also only weighed 10 pounds at 17 months old.
Jesus.
And, you know, just for those of you who aren't aware, according to the World Health Organization, the median weight of a 17-month-old girl is 22.1 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, we know babies who are 10 pounds at birth.
Yeah.
And this child was almost a year and a half old, like walking, you know, presumably like at that age at least, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Irving Rudd eventually confessed to causing Tarika's death, saying, quote, "Although I've killed her, it's not intentional, and I realize that I have done something wrong," end quote. Rudd ended up being convicted of involuntary manslaughter and received a sentence of up to 15 years. He ended up serving about 10 and was released from prison in 2002, 3 years before Relisha was born. After that, though, he pretty much stayed out of trouble. I actually, in doing this episode now in 2024, I did do another background check of him. He apparently did have an arrest in 2016 for what seemed to be a combination traffic domestic violence charge. And he went to trial from what it looks like, but he was found not guilty. Irving and Shamika didn't stay together very long. And family members say that Irving was pretty much out of Relisha's life from the time she was a year old. It's unclear if the problems Relisha experienced as a child started before or after her parents split up. But in the summer of 2007, social workers already had Relisha, who was not yet two, on their radar. After conducting a home visit, they found evidence of inadequate food for her and her baby brother, along with indications that she had been physically abused.
And how old is she at this point?
She's not even two.
But Irving's been gone.
Yeah, so it says Irving left right around this time.
Oh, okay.
So she does have a baby brother, so mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure when they split up. But yeah, he was out of her life. By the time she's about a year old, she's not quite two, so this is all, you know, basically that same year.
Got it. But Irving could have been the one abusing her.
Could have been. Despite the evidence of abuse, Relisha and her brother remained in the home, and soon Shamika entered into a new relationship with a man named Antonio Wheeler. Shamika and Antonio eventually had two more sons together. Unfortunately, this didn't mean that Relisha's life became more stable. In fact, things seemed to get worse. In 2010, social services returned to her home and found unsanitary living conditions. The home was covered in cigarette butts, and there was evidence that Relisha and her siblings, who were all under the age of five, had been left alone regularly and allowed to bathe themselves. Social workers also cited medical neglect, as one of Alicia's brothers had reportedly undergone surgery but had not been followed up with by a doctor. Again, despite these new findings, all of the children were permitted to remain in the home. Soon after this, things began to deteriorate even more for the family, and they lost their apartment. Shamika and her children were eventually forced to stay with Shamika's sister, Ashley Young. That arrangement didn't last long, however, as Ashley was on a government housing subsidy, which limited the number of people allowed into the home. So in the summer of 2013, with nowhere else to go, Shamika and her children moved into the DC General Family Shelter. The DC General Family Shelter was the second iteration of a large building that originally served as a hospital. Now, this was shut down completely in 2018, but at the time Shamika and her children were staying there, it was home to approximately 250 families, totaling about 1,000 people, of whom around 600 were children.
That's a lot.
It's so many people in one building. And the living conditions were awful. People would get bitten by spiders in their beds. There were no playgrounds for the children. They were just forced to, you know, run around the hallways of this old hospital, basically.
So it was all self-contained in one building?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
And it was run by the city, and so the city, of course, contracted out different companies to help maintain the facility, right? So janitors, like other staff, were all contract employees. Now, these employees, because they're around children, were supposed to be background checked and have clean criminal records, et cetera, et cetera. None of that apparently happened. So you had unqualified people working there, you had dangerous people working there, and that absolutely feeds into what eventually happens to Alicia.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Alicia reportedly hating living in the shelter, which by all accounts was horrible. Melissa Young, Shamika's mother and Alicia's grandmother, told InsideEdition.com that Alicia, quote, called it a trap house, end quote. Like I said, the conditions were miserable. The shelter had bed bugs, rotten food, drug deals, sexual assaults. I mean, just every terrible thing you can think of was happening right here. So it makes sense that Shamika tried to get her kids out of that environment as much as possible. It was summer. The children didn't even have school as a refuge. Even though Shamika's relationship with her sister Ashley was strained after Ashley told them that they couldn't stay with her anymore, Ashley still helped out with the kids, having them over to her house frequently. But that's when things started to get strange. Ashley told InsideEdition.com, quote, I would get the kids every week, but I wouldn't really get Alicia, end quote. Ashley, of course, didn't understand that. Like, why was Shamika only sending the boys over? So she asked her. And according to Ashley, Shamika said that Alicia was with her godfather.
Well, who's her godfather?
According to Ashley, from what she knew, Ashley's fiance, Melvin, was her godfather. And Alicia was not with Melvin. So Ashley obviously thought this was strange, but, you know, at the end of the day, Shamika was Alicia's mom, and so it was up to her who her daughter spent time with and where Alicia was. So Ashley didn't feel as though it was her place to question it too much. But then things kept getting stranger. One day, when Alicia was actually over at her aunt's house, Ashley received a strange phone call. It was a man that Ashley had never spoken to before who said he would be over soon to pick Alicia up. Obviously, alarm bells immediately started going off for Ashley, and she asked the man, quote, how did you get my number? How did you get my address? How do you know where I live?
Right.
End quote.
Yeah.
So after hanging up, Ashley immediately called her sister to find out what the hell was going on, but According to Ashley, Shamika wasn't worried. She told Ashley that the man who called was Relisha's godfather and that it was totally fine if he came to pick her up.
Like, who is this dude?
Ashley seriously had no idea. And she was so confused as to who this stranger was and why Relisha was spending so much time with him and why the boys weren't.
Right.
And Ashley didn't know who it was at the time, but we know now that the man on the other end of that phone call was Khalil Tatum. Khalil Tatum was not a name Ashley had heard before. He was not an old family friend or anything that would make sense. As she would find out, and as we would all find out, he was the man who would be responsible for Relisha's story going down the darkest path. Khalil Tatum was a 50-year-old custodian at the DC General Family Shelter. He had befriended Shamika and had taken a special interest in Relisha. He began spending more and more time with the girl, taking her shopping and sightseeing in DC. Eventually, Relisha started spending the weekends with Tatum. Even as I was going back through the script and like rewriting it and, you know, adding the new stuff and reading newer articles, the story is still just so hard to get through. Melissa Young, Alicia's grandmother, told InsideEdition.com that she was initially wary of this man's interest in her granddaughter, but that she eventually warmed up to him, saying, quote, "I've spent time over at DC General when I spent time with my daughter and her kids. I've seen him when he was getting off work and have had little short conversations with him and felt very comfortable. I trusted him. I felt comfortable with him. And I don't trust everybody," end quote.
I mean, that's all well and good having short conversations, but you know, this 50-year-old dude is taking a quote unquote special interest in a little girl that's not his.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to offer some help to, you know, the mother or, you know, to
the family as a whole. But witnesses saw Khalil Tatum offer little girls in the shelter gifts and money.
Yeah, I mean, this is
not little boys, not families, nothing like that.
This just screams pedophilia and grooming.
Yeah.
All through it.
Melissa justified Shamika's decision to allow Relisha to spend time with Tatum as her way to get Relisha out of the toxic environment at the shelter. Yet, Tatum never invited Relisha's brothers to stay over or go shopping with him.
Right.
Despite the Young family feeling comfortable with Relisha spending more and more time alone with a 50-year-old man, there were, of course, other problems with the situation. DC Family General Shelter, supposedly, had a strict policy in place against employees fraternizing with guests. But like many stated policies, this one wasn't exactly enforced. In the investigation that followed Relisha's disappearance, it was revealed that several staff members at DC General were aware of Tatum's relationship with Relisha and failed to report it. Similarly, it was policy that nightly bed checks were performed to ensure that all of the residents were on site. Yet records show that Shamika's children were only accounted for less than 50% of the time.
So who was responsible for doing the bed checks? It wouldn't have been the janitors, right?
No. It was just other staff at the shelter.
And they just weren't reporting it, anything?
Yeah, no.
Or recording anything?
Well, it sounds like they were recording it because when the investigation was done, they were able to find that no, Shamika's children weren't there when they were supposed to be there.
And whoever was doing these checks was just like, well.
Beyond that, if Shamika's only goal was to have her daughter stay in a safe place out of the shelter, which is understandable, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That part makes complete sense. When she's sending her kids over to her sister's house as much as possible, that makes sense. Getting them out of the shelter, getting them out of that environment makes sense. But you go back to the day that Ashley talks about where Relisha was at her house.
Right. So why was Tatum coming over to get Relisha?
Yeah, she was already out of the bad environment. She was in a safe place. She was with her brothers.
Right.
She was with her aunt. As the months went on, Relisha started spending more and more time with Tatum. On February 26, 2014, around 7:30 p.m., security cameras caught Tatum and Relisha heading toward a room at the Holiday Inn Express on Bladensburg Road in Northeast D.C. Relisha was wearing pink boots, dark pants, and a blue winter coat. She was carrying a white plastic bag full of what could possibly be takeout food. Tatum was dressed in khaki pants, a dark winter coat, and what appears to be a lanyard with an ID badge. He was also carrying a children's backpack. Both Relisha and Tatum appear to be at ease. And honestly, looking at the video, for anybody who saw them, you know, randomly in the hotel, you would think that it was a grandfather with his granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Relisha's whereabouts after this day are a little unclear, but she is confirmed to have been seen alive after her trip to the Holiday Inn Express with Tatum. Her last confirmed sighting was on March 1st, 2014. According to an article on WJLA.com, Shamika Young's Instagram account has a video dated March 1st that shows Relisha with her siblings. A family member confirmed that this video was taken during the first week of March after the kids got new shoes. But that Instagram post wasn't the only confirmed sighting of Relisha on March 1st. She was also seen yet again with Khalil Tatum. This time, they were spotted on security footage going into another D.C. area hotel room, this time a Days Inn. In February of 2014, and into at least March 1st, Relisha wasn't really going to school. She was unaccounted for a great deal of the time and spending a lot of that time with Khalil Tatum. Her whereabouts, like I said, are unconfirmed for big portions of that time. And it seems as though her own family didn't really know where she was.
Yeah, I was just about to ask if anybody from her family could report anything.
No. So years later, Antonio Wheeler, who was Shamika's boyfriend, said that he was under the impression that Relisha had gone to a hotel with Tatum because it was a pool party for his granddaughter.
Oh, right. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. That. So that was like one of the incidences. I don't know if that was the Holiday Inn or the Days Inn or, you know, right. Which one.
But that was one instance.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Relisha's last confirmed sighting is on March 1st, like I mentioned. And on March 2nd, Tatum is seen on surveillance video purchasing a carton of black 42-gallon contractor bags in D.C. He was then seen later in the area of the Aquatic Gardens. Between March 2nd and March 20th, Tatum is seen by witnesses many times at work and other places, but Relisha was never seen with him. On March 19th, a social worker at Relisha's school decided to look into the second grader's absences. By this point, Relisha had missed a total of 30 days of school over that school year. And most of those 30 days had been in the
February.
Past. Yeah, it was like January and February. The school had been in touch with Shamika regarding her many absences, but Shamika kept on telling them that Relisha was missing school due to illness. So they were like, listen, your kid can't miss this much school, even if she is sick. Like, we need documentation. You know, we need doctor's notes. We need proof. We need something. And she basically told the school, she's like, okay, let me get all the paperwork together. I'll get the documents you want. But she's under the care of Dr. Tatum.
What the hell?
Labone Workman, the social worker, decided to go down to the shelter to speak with Dr. Tatum in person. A 2024 Washington Post article describes what happened next. Quote, Workman recalled feeling blood rush to his ears. In the moments that followed, he realized the man he had been speaking to by phone, the person Relisha's mother had told him was treating her daughter for migraines, and the reason he delayed notifying the city's Child and Family Services Agency after Relisha hit 10 days of unexcused absences, was a janitor. Workman called 671-SAFE, the city hotline for reports of child abuse, and soon law enforcement officers arrived. End quote.
So he had been posing over the phone as an actual doctor.
Yeah, and that's not something I realized until this 2024 article. I didn't realize that the social worker from the school had actually spoken to Khalil Tatum.
Right.
I thought he had only spoken to Shamika.
So Shamika and Tatum are in on whatever is going on together.
Yeah, it would appear that way. An investigation began, and police found that while Khalil Tatum did work on March 19th, he clocked out early. According to a timeline published by the Washington Post, social services called Tatum, and his phone went straight to voicemail. A missing persons investigation was finally launched that day, 18 days after Alicia Rudd's last confirmed sighting. And keep in mind that this missing persons investigation was launched because of that social worker from her school. No one in Alicia's family reported her missing because, according to them, they thought she was under Tatum's care.
Even if she was under Tatum's care, like, who is Tatum to her?
Well,
you know, like,
so he had been going to work the entire month.
Right. So then who's watching her when he's at work?
Exactly. Where is she? She's not at school. So there's no way that, you know, Relisha's mom didn't know something weird was going on, right? I'm confused by her grandmother as well, because Melissa also told InsideEdition.com that when police first talked to her, she said that she was on her way to pick Relisha up.
So does this family just not trust, you know, agencies, government agencies, law enforcement, social services, what have you, and they just like lie to keep them out of their business?
I don't know. But according to Melissa, she said, quote, "The police said to me, did you know your granddaughter is missing? I'm like, no, she's not missing. She's with Khalil Tatum. I spoke with her twice. Me and Ashley had just talked to her that morning," end quote. But I don't think that she did talk to her that morning. And I definitely don't think Ashley did.
Right.
Because if they had talked to her that morning and that was independently verified in any way, that would have come out in one of the many, many news stories in the past decade.
Right.
But her missing date is March 1st. It's not March 19th when this investigation starts. And it could be, too, that Melissa, kind of what you were saying, she could have been trying to cover for her daughter. Because in that 2024 Washington Post article I mentioned, you know, Melissa does talk about how, like, when Shamika started having her kids and was starting having the visits from social services, she had told Shamika, like, be careful, don't lose your kids, because it's so easy to lose them and it's so hard to get them back.
Yeah.
Because if you remember, Melissa lost Shamika.
Mm-hmm.
Shamika grew up in the foster care system. And so it very much could have been like, oh, yeah, what? No, I talked to her this morning. She's with Khalil Tatum. She's fine. I'm going to pick her up. She very well could have said that to cover for her daughter in a misguided attempt to help, because right. She didn't want her grandchildren to end up in foster care.
Yeah.
That night, shortly after police started searching for Alicia, Khalil Tatum and his wife, Andrea, checked into the Red Roof Inn in Oxon Hill with three other people. Alicia was not with this group. Less than an hour later, the three members of the group left, leaving Tatum and his wife behind. The next morning, shortly before 6 a.m., one of the friends returned to pick Tatum up. When he went to the motel room, he says he saw Andrea lying face down on the bed, but Tatum wouldn't let him come in. They left, and the man drove Tatum to the Southern Avenue metro station and dropped him off. Just over 2 hours later, at 8:01 a.m. on March 20th, police entered the room at the Red Roof Inn and found Andrea Tatum dead, shot once in the head. Khalil Tatum was charged with murder, and a manhunt began. At this point, police believed that Tatum was responsible for Relisha's disappearance. What they didn't know was if Relisha was dead or if Tatum had gone on the run with her. By the time Andrea's body was found, DC police had already issued an Amber Alert for Relisha, along with photos of two cars that Tatum was known to drive. DC Police Chief Kathy Lanier told reporters that the city was doing everything they could to find Relisha, saying, quote, "Our Amber Alert went through systems as far north as Pennsylvania and as far south as Florida," end quote. And of course, that sounds like a good move, and that's exactly what you would want
police
to do in that situation, especially because, you know, Relisha's already been missing for 18 days, 19 days by this point. The suspect's wife was just found murdered, but the statement doesn't actually appear to have been true. The Amber Alert was issued in DC, and residents received cell phone notifications. There were signs on the freeway and also notifications in local media. But according to an article on WJLA.com, quote, the state law enforcement agencies responsible for issuing Amber Alerts in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida all tell ABC 7 News that there were no requests from DC to issue an Amber Alert, end quote.
Not a good look for the chief.
No. Geographically, they started in DC. You can be in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia in under an hour, I would say, to all those. Delaware, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But from DC, you can be in any of those other places in under an hour.
Yeah. You can, it's traffic depending, of course.
Of course.
45 minutes to the Pennsylvania line.
Yeah.
Probably.
And North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida are, of course, further away, but they're straight down 95.
Yep.
So these are all places where you would have wanted people to keep an eye out. Maryland State Police issued two critical missing alerts, but could not issue an Amber Alert unless MPD, which is DC Police, requested it. Maryland State Police spokesperson Greg Shipley told WJLA, quote, we just did not receive the request to issue the Amber Alert, end quote. That statement was echoed by officials in West Virginia, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Eventually, Georgia issued its own Amber Alert, but while DC police certainly sent out notifications to other state law enforcement agencies regarding Relisha's disappearance, Chief Lanier's claim of an East Coast Amber Alert is simply untrue. Days passed without any sightings of either Relisha or Tatum. On March 24th, the FBI released additional photos of both Relisha and Khalil Tatum. The next day, on March 25th, they offered a $25,000 reward for Relisha's return. Prince George's County Police offered a separate $25,000 reward for information leading to Tatum's arrest. Throughout this time, tips were coming in and police were investigating Tatum further. They found that Relisha wasn't the only little girl he had contact with at the shelter, which again is acting completely against policy. And though he offered these girls gifts and money, often in view of other staff members, he was never reported.
Do we know, does he have any type of special relationship with anybody else at the shelter this time? Any other little girls?
I haven't seen anything where he was taking other little girls off the premises.
Okay.
In terms of what was happening on the site, premises.
Yeah.
As days started to go by with no sign of either Khalil Tatum or Relisha, police said that they could not rule out the possibility that Tatum murdered the little girl. In fact, another body was about to be found, but it wasn't Relisha's. On March 31st, a body was discovered in Kenilworth Park and Aquatic Garden in D.C. On April 1st, 1 month to the day after Relisha was last seen alive, the body was officially identified as her suspected abductor, Khalil Tatum. The cause of death was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police believe that it was the same gun that he'd used to kill his wife. Following this gruesome discovery, police searched the 700-acre park for any sign of Relisha, but they came up empty-handed.
Didn't you say that, he went to a hardware store, got...
Contractor bags,
and you said that he was seen at this park where his body was discovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after buying those contractor bags?
Yeah.
Who was he seen by there? Do we know?
I don't. I think it was surveillance. Mm-hmm. Surveillance cameras.
So, and time frame of when that was purchased again?
It was March 2nd, the day after Relisha was last seen.
Yeah. I mean, so to me, like the fact that he went there to kill himself, there's significance in that property.
Right.
Or that space. I do find it odd that they weren't able to find anything there I mean, 700 acres is a lot, but it's self-contained. I mean,
it's,
you know,
yeah, it's DC, a park in DC.
It's not a dense forest area.
Yeah, it's not the wilderness. It's not a mountain. It's, yeah.
Right.
It's
so there's some significance to that park.
Yeah, I would agree.
And for Alicia.
And yes, police, after they found his body, obviously they did the search of the park, but volunteer groups did many more searches. I mean, when I said Alicia's story affected people who never met her formed groups and searched. A woman named Brenda Brown, who was a retired federal employee, she was like 60 at the time, had never met Alicia, but she was so touched by the story that she founded a Facebook group dedicated to her called We Are Alicia. She also sponsored volunteer searches. Like I mentioned, she got a search dog down from Maine to do this. Many searches were done of this area, and not a single clue was ever found.
No hit from the canines at all, huh?
No.
Because in looking at where this is, the only thing that I could say potentially would be that there is a river that runs right through the middle of that Anacostia, which, you know, eventually makes its way out to the Chesapeake.
Yeah.
But you would still think that there would have been canine hits previous to getting to the river.
Right. If she had been there.
Right. But maybe the length of delay, you know, because you're talking about 18, 19 days missing before they search.
Well, no, by this time it's a month. When they find him dead, it's been a month.
Right. So, I mean, by that point, maybe all traces of her scent would have been gone.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's hard, right? Because, you know, search and rescue dogs are different from cadaver dogs. And so, the amount of time that those smells stick around, I think, do differ.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. But nothing was found. Alicia has now been missing for 10 years. Like I said at the beginning, we did our original episode on this 4 years ago. And unfortunately, there just really isn't a lot of new information that has come up in the past 4 years. There has still not been any sign of her anywhere. Nobody has come forward to talk. We don't know if anybody saw her with Khalil Tatum after March 1st. We don't know the circumstances around him murdering his wife. I mean, there are wild theories, of course. But one of the prevailing ones is that she found out what he had been doing to Alicia and he shot her.
Yeah, sound theory.
Yeah, but we don't know. Authorities believe Alicia is no longer alive, and searches have centered around finding a body. In December of 2015, authorities searched a large construction site in Northeast DC, but turned up nothing. Then on April 6, 2016, police announced that they would be using divers to search around the National Arboretum. The Anacostia River, like you were just talking about.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering if they had ever drugged the river.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and for those unfamiliar with the area, the Anacostia neighborhood itself, it's not a very good neighborhood. And the Anacostia River itself is really nasty.
Yeah. So I don't think that they dragged the river. I don't think that they did anything like that initially. And I don't know if they just did more of a basic search back in 2014, because it does sound like this 2016 search was the first time that they used divers. In December of 2018, after receiving a tip, police searched a network of tunnels beneath the shelter where Alicia and her family stayed, but they found no sign of the missing girl. The more time that goes by without a body being found leads more and more people to think that Alicia could possibly be alive and possibly a victim of a sex trafficking ring, with some even accusing Shamika of giving Alicia to Tatum for exactly that purpose.
I mean, she knows more than she's saying publicly. I don't know. We obviously don't know what the police have found out, but obviously nothing criminal. Otherwise, she'd be in jail.
Right.
But there's something going on here.
Right. I think with the active subterfuge that she and Cleo Tatum were doing with the school.
Yes.
I think really points to like something. There's no plausible deniability there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I also do want to point out that Shamika, from what I could find, has no criminal record whatsoever. So I just
take that for what it is.
Just putting that out there. But sex trafficking is a $99 billion a year industry in the United States. And Tatum's grooming behaviors and frequent trips with Alicia to area motels would fit with the sex trafficking theory. But once again, there has never been any evidence that we know of that Alicia's mother had any knowledge of potential sex trafficking related to Khalil Tatum and her daughter. For his part, Antonio Wheeler believes that Alicia is still alive out there. He told WUSA 9, quote, "I actually believe she's still alive. They just keep looking for a body, and every time they look for a body, you find nothing. So what did that tell you?" End quote. He also said, quote, "I pray to God that she's alive because I don't know what I'd do if she come up any other way but alive." End quote. Alicia's family was forever shattered when she disappeared. Various family members pointed fingers at the shelter and at each other, with Shamika, Antonio, and Melissa all going on the Steve Wilkos show several years after her disappearance and accusing one another of contributing to Alicia's disappearance.
I mean, hey, look, they all missed something. Like, there's no way around it. Look, just looking at this, they all missed something. And I don't typically get judgmental about family members, but like, really, a 50-year-old janitor like taking care of this little girl, and yeah, it raised alarm bells, but nobody did anything. Nobody pried just a little bit more to find out what the hell was going on and why she was going over to this guy's house.
Yeah. And one interesting parallel that I noticed was that though she was older, she was a teenager, that's kind of how Shamika met Relisha's father.
Yeah.
He was an older janitor. She was in foster care. Like, she was in a vulnerable place. They started a relationship. So to an extent, that situation has already been normalized for her.
Yeah, but it wasn't normalized for the rest of her family.
The day Relisha went missing, her siblings were removed from Shamika's care. Relisha's father, Irving Rudd, who had previously tried to get full custody of his children in 2012, tried again after Relisha's disappearance. His request was denied by a judge who cited Rudd's conviction for involuntary manslaughter.
It's a pretty good reason to not give him his kids back. Sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, what was horrible is all three of these children were younger than Relisha at the time, and Relisha was only 8. So these are very young children. They each got split up. None of them were able to stay together. One of them got sent out of state. The other one got adopted. Another one they were having trouble finding placement for, and he was kind of bounced around a lot. I mean, these kids who had already been through a horribly traumatic event were then re-traumatized by the system. They were so close with their sister. So Relisha's nickname was Little Mama because she took care of her little brothers. Like, she helped them get dressed. She held their hands when they crossed the street. She took care of them. And then she was just gone. And then they were split up and taken away from everybody that they knew. Antonio Wheeler, who is the father of Relisha's two youngest brothers, has spent the last decade trying to get his children out of foster care. He says that both of his children were traumatized by Relisha's disappearance. His older son refuses to talk about her, and his younger son still feels in his heart that his sister is alive out there, but that people just aren't looking hard enough. Derricka Wilson, co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, holds out hope that Relisha is alive. She told the Washington Post, quote, "Relisha could be anywhere. She could be in California. She could be overseas." And again, that media coverage is so vital because someone can walk by her and recognize her, and it can result in her being recovered. We have seen miracles happen, end quote. Ever since her disappearance, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has released age-progressed illustrations of Relisha. This year, they released a new one showing what she might look like now as an 18-year-old. It takes a village to raise a child, but it also takes a village to fail one. Relisha Rudd's disappearance highlighted not only the problems within her family, but more importantly, the systemic problems that allowed this little girl to fall through the cracks. The DC General Shelter where Relisha and her family stayed has been torn down. Instead of housing hundreds of people in one large facility in which children aren't allowed to run or play, families experiencing homelessness are now placed in one of seven shelters around the city. These smaller shelters have playgrounds, and a focus is put on transitioning the families within into permanent housing. In the years following Relisha's disappearance, her grandmother Melissa has tried to repair her relationship with Shamika. By the time they all went on the Steve Wilkos show, it was just a mess. And like I said, they're all blaming each other. But the way Melissa started to look at it was she already lost her granddaughter, and she didn't want to lose her daughter as well. Both Melissa and Shamika attended classes to receive their high school diplomas, and as of March 2024, Shamika had graduated with Melissa close behind. Melissa planned on wearing a picture of her granddaughter on her graduation cap. Khalil Tatum wasn't a doctor. He wasn't a kindly adult trying to help a child in a bad situation. He was a convicted felon. He was a predator. He was a murderer. He used his position to take advantage of people in vulnerable periods in their lives. He took an 8-year-old girl to various motels. He killed his wife, and then he killed himself. Many people also believe that he killed Relisha, but a decade later, there's still no proof that she's dead. Relisha Rudd is one of the main reasons I decided to make a podcast that only focused on unsolved missing persons cases. Just as Derica Wilson said, miracles do happen. And even if we don't see a miracle in Relisha's case, there's always the hope that by keeping her name and story alive, we will get answers. Relisha Rudd has been missing from Washington, D.C. since March 1st, 2014. Relisha is a Black female with black hair and brown eyes. She was approximately 4 feet tall and 80 pounds at the time of her disappearance. Relisha was 8 years old when she went missing. She would be 18 today. If you have any information on Relisha Rudd's whereabouts or any information regarding her disappearance, please call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. You can also contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST or the Metropolitan Police Department at 1-202-265-9100. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Dethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.